Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. I'm glad you're here. I hope you can pull up a chair and sit with Tom Conway and Chris Dawson and myself while we regale you with some stories about food and autumn, and I don't know, we're going to see what comes up today. We have a tiny plan, but we never seem to be able to keep on our plan. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
Welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Hey, thanks.
First day of October.
I know.
What does that make you think of?
Well, I do think that I was chilly this morning, and I had to actually turn on my heater, and then I thought, well, that's a nice smell. Perhaps I should change the
perhaps
filter.
I should clean it a little bit.
Yeah, the ducks might be kind of scary down there.
And hello, Chris.
Hello.
I'm glad you're here, too.
Thank you.
Chris is manning the board for us today. He'll provide some witty remarks in a while, I'm sure. He always does.
I have some lined up.
Okay, good. I'm glad to
know
that.
What's the subject?
I'll tell you later. I'll tell you after a while.
We figure it out as we go.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be interesting if we talked a little bit about weekend review. Like, what'd you do over the weekend? How was your, how have you been? It's been a while since we've been here together.
Yeah. You know, it was a good one. In fact, it was a great one because one of the things I love about Vashon is there are so many talented people here. And, you know, I think sometimes we not necessarily take it for granted, but we just think it's the norm. And I went to go see Cyclone Line, Kat Eggleston's play, where she performed and she wrote the music for it. And it was about her father growing up in the Dust Bowl. It was absolutely special as overuse, but it was extraordinary.
It really was. I had guests from out of town over the weekend and we went, and oh my gosh, they were so totally impressed. And I was too. I laughed and I cried and.
Yeah, it was really it was a tight little production. Mm-hmm. It was just so heartfelt, and but the music was so beautiful. And then in between the music, the storytelling was really captivating.
It was
yeah,
it really was. Well, we played tourist on our own island, or on my island, I guess.
And really? Who was your tour guide?
My tour guide was Mr. Chris Austin.
Mostly true guy?
Yeah, we did the mostly true tours, and I have to say, it was mostly true. But there was also some kind of funny points in there. But, you know, sometimes it's really a good idea to be a tourist on your own island.
Yeah. Did you do it like one of those duck boats? Or
no, we didn't get to the duck boat part. We did the cram in the back seat part, you know, with three big people in the back seat.
The Ford Escape that we almost couldn't escape from at one point.
We couldn't get
the locks out.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. We spent quite a bit of time at Mukai Gardens.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Mukai Farm, what do we say?
Mukai Farm and Gardens.
Farm and Gardens, yeah. And that was really deeply moving place because they'd never seen it. They'd never been there.
Oh.
And now it's been restored or is in the process of being restored.
No, it's amazing what they've done.
That garden they've done is just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's some just amazing volunteers on this island, people with vision.
Well, it was interesting because my out-of-town company was... You know how I'm always fascinated by blending cultures and different ideas from different cultures come and they end up in the same pot.
Your Greek tacos were not a hit.
No, that tzatziki didn't work very well on a taco.
Tzatziki ice cream. No, that's bad.
No. But anyway, we had one of my friends who was here is Randy Bardwell, who used to live here, and he grew up in Iran. With his dad being a diplomat, and another friend was Korean, and so he spent some time talking about his grandmother, who did a mishmash of Korean and American food, and none of it was, I mean, it was okay, I guess. I don't know if grandma's going to be listening, but but it was really interesting to talk about some different recipes and different ideas. And
it was fusion to forget, was that?
Yeah, that's probably it. But I think... you know, October 1st, to me, October's my favorite month ever, no matter what. I just start thinking of harvest and bounty and cider and pumpkins and all the stuff that we think about. And you were telling me earlier that the fruit club's doing the cider pressing this weekend, right?
Yeah. And there's the big, Cider Fest. And what's really great about the Cider Fest is it incorporates a lot of people doing a lot of things.
A lot of different things.
All based on basically the you know, king fruit of Washington State, which is the apple. There's a fresh cider pressing where you can buy cider. I think that's usually around 10 to 4. Mm-hmm. And the fruit club goes around and gets copious amounts of apples, cleans them, rinses them, prepares them for cider pressing, and then they're doing it there down at the
Village. It's going to be at the Village. Yeah.
And so they do that, and then they have usually Dr. Bob Norton and Emily McCray will identify apples.
They're going to be there again this year. Yeah,
they're awesome.
And there's some music and some food, and it'll be really fun, I think. We're supposed to have some decent weather, I hope.
Yeah, and then sort of the star of the show as far as, the apples are the star, but kind of a bright spot for a lot of people is that they're going to have a cider tasting, and... So, in fact, it's going to be, I think it's $25, and you go in and have a tasting glass and 5 tickets, and you can taste a number of ciders, and the producers are, I'll let you know, Dragon's Head Cider from Vashon, Nashi Orchards from Vashon, Vashon Winery from Vashon, and then Alpenfire, Cockrell Hard Cider, Whitewood Cider, Snow Drift Cider, and Liberty Cider Works.
And some of these I don't know. That'll be really fun to taste.
Yeah.
And Nashi is a Piri.
Right.
So they're pears and apples.
Yeah, and an Asian pear.
Which is so unique.
It sounds really good to
me. And such a clean cider.
Isn't it? And they kind of make like a little... cognac, I guess, out of it, or
I think it's called Pommier.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's French. It's Pommier. I was trying to act like I knew, but I can't fake it.
Well, you know, so back to the Apple Festival. Let's talk about Johnny Appleseed for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know, I didn't know this, but the apples that he planted really were not for eating.
No.
They made a lot of cider back in that day.
Yeah, it was basically because water quality was pretty poor, and it was sort of the drink. It was the drink of the American Revolution, the drink of the settlers, the colonial, colonies, and apples weren't like we get them now. They weren't sweet at all.
They were little tiny
and bitter
sour things that needed really to be processed into cider.
And
in Massachusetts, I found this little tidbit. In 1767, the average Massachusetts citizen drank 35 gallons of cider per year.
That's awesome.
Which is, you know, that's a lot of cider. And then during Prohibition,
Means everyone was kind of walking around a little looped.
Probably feeling kind of good.
Hey, I have an idea. Why don't we get a revolution going?
Let's try something here, boys.
Those British are annoying.
Well, okay. So that just kept happening and happening. Everybody drank cider. Well, then, you know, go all the way forward 200 years to 1930 and the Prohibition. Mm-hmm. Those people actually chopped down some trees that Johnny Appleseed planted.
But cider wasn't illegal.
No, it wasn't.
You can still do that on a farm.
No, but it was that they'd look at the tree and say, that's a booze tree, and they'd chop it down. Yeah,
that's crazy.
I know.
It was medicines, religious alcohol, and hard ciders were not prohibited.
Oh.
But beer was.
Right.
Yeah, and so then after the cider was prohibited and they chopped down most of the trees, that's when beer became much more popular because it was easy to grow and they didn't have the trees anymore. And the cider trees were mostly gone. So we went to beer. And now the cider, of course, is coming back. It's been back for a few years.
Yeah, it really, and it's surprising how, I remember when I was in my 20s and I was in Europe for the first time and I had cider in France and I went, holy moly, why don't we have this?
Yeah.
You know, and it took like 20 years for me to find it really available on most store shelves.
Good.
Yeah.
So good. I cook with it a little bit too, you know. It makes a marvelous braising liquid.
Does.
For chicken. It makes a nice
pork chops and cider
brine.
Yeah,
for pork, it's really good that way.
And apples on it.
And so I think everybody ought to go check out the cider thing this weekend.
Yeah, it's a family thing, you know, and mommy and daddy can go test the cider later on when the library's just across the street, send the kids over with a book.
You know, the other thing that always comes to my mind at this time of year is pick a lily, and that's usually September into the middle of October, because I make mine with green tomatoes and cauliflower and maybe a little bit of carrot.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots and lots and lots of different kinds of pickle lilies.
Well, would you explain that to someone? I'm asking for a friend
okay.
who might not know what that is.
What pickle lily is?
Yes. Yeah, because I used to call it, I was telling her I called it Piccadilly forever.
It was Piccadilly Circus.
No one ever corrected me. Yeah.
Well, pickle lily is like, it's a relish. It's a relish okay. that you use on the side. You don't really eat it as a side dish, but it's great with meat and cheese and that kind of thing. And the word comes from pica lilo, which is...
Small.
Isn't that your stage name?
No. Shh, don't be telling secrets.
900 no. number name.
But there are several versions. Now, wait a minute.
That was years ago, and things have changed.
I got the internet now.
I live on Vashon now.
That's right. She's a respectable woman.
Okay, so I just want to tell you that there are several different versions of it. And Turkish version of it, it has a lot of other spices in it, which you can imagine. Think of Turkish food with cumin and coriander and turmeric and that kind of thing. Whereas the American version is kind of a sweet, spicy. It's a mustard. There's mustard in it. And there's sugar in it. And there's vinegar in it. So it's kind of pickly and a kind of relishy. And it
can
be.
I would like that.
I think you would like it. It's very good. And then, is Suriname still a country? I hate to show my ignorance.
So it's on the east coast of South America, right?
Yeah. But I didn't know if it had changed its name. But anyway,
wait,
I know that
it got married. It's hyphenated now.
No, it's still there.
It's still there. Oh, yeah. Good. See, I shouldn't have been so silly. But anyway, theirs is very, very spicy because they like really spicy food. And then in Cyprus, they make pickle lily, which they call pickle lily, with no onions. Cannot have onions. So
that's craziness.
I don't know. And then I found a new recipe. I'm going to try this year that you can make pickle lily with pears. So you put some pears in it and some zucchini and onions, cauliflower.
How would you eat that?
I put it on, I like a meat and cheese board thing, you know, with you can put it on a sandwich, put it on, if you're serving a roast chicken or something, that it's like a cranberry relish, except it's pickle-lily.
Gotcha.
And so, do you know Branston pickle from, or think of the pickles in Indian cooking. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's just a different animal. And they're beautiful when they sit on the shelf. They're so colorful.
The gherkins? Or is that Gurkhas?
Gurkhas.
Well, one of those is a warrior.
Yes.
One is a pickle.
Okay. Well, yeah, what is a pickle? We're in a pickle. So we also were talking about quince.
Yes.
As an autumn delight that not a lot of people know about, or if they do know about it, it's a big puzzle. Because they're
quince.
Quince. Do you know about quince?
I know Quincy, the medical examiner. That's it. As close as I can get.
No.
Quince. Well, I've never heard of it.
It's like a cross between a pear and an apple, kind of.
Really?
But it's very kind of. I mean,
It looks like that. Yeah.
It looks like that. It doesn't taste anything like
that. It would hurt you if it fell off a tree and hit you in the head. It's
very hard.
Really firm. And it doesn't soften until you cook it.
And you wouldn't want to eat it until you cook it because it's like alum in your mouth. It gives you that puckery, terrible dry thing that
happens. But when you cook it, it's magic. It goes...
It turns rosy pink. It's just beautiful.
It does.
And I'm a fan of quince chutney. I make quince chutney all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend. I gave some quince chutney to a friend of mine for Thanksgiving one year, and they were having a smoked turkey. And after it was over, she just was raving about the quince and the smoked turkey and the combination of it, the quince chutney and the smoked turkey was just heaven in her mouth, she said. And she wanted to learn how to make it for the next year. And I said, terrific, do that. You know, so I wrote down the notes because really there's no recipe. You put some of this in and some of that in. I wrote down what you do. And I said, and then you simmer and simmer and simmer. And if it gets a little dry, add more liquid. And so that, you know, that's pretty self-explanatory. So it was getting a little dry. So she added a little more vinegar, and it got a little drier, and she added a little more vinegar, and she was mistaken about the liquid she added. It didn't turn out very well for her, so I was remiss, I guess, in saying don't add more vinegar.
But
you can add more apple juice or more, you know, just even water.
You could use it for like a cleansing paste. Keep your sinks clean.
Keep your palate and taste buds
scorched. You could exfoliate your face with it. It would be lovely.
So... For the stupid guy here, what is a chutney? What
well,
makes it?
It's along the same lines as we just talked about. Yeah, pickle lily, except it's its origins are India, basically, and you can make chutney out of a mango chutney or a quince chutney. I have apple chutney.
Yeah, I have a summer fruit chutney I make.
And it's got, usually it has raisins and onions and hot peppers. Okay. And
like, I've had chutney, and I'm like, how is this not jelly or jam or...
I think because it tends to, it's like, it's just shy of falling off the cliff of sweetness. It's still got enough. It's sharp enough that it's more of a condiment in that regard.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Whereas I think jams and jellies are pretty much all pretty sweet, minimal sharpness, and from like lemons, just to keep them keep their color and their vibrant look.
But, although I have been known to use Major Gray's chutney, mango chutney, not the spicy one. There's a hot one and a regular one, as jam on a biscuit.
No, that's really good.
And it's pretty good. That's pretty good.
My favorite sandwich in Juneau, Alaska, when I used to live there, was at this sandwich shop called Beauty and the Feast.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had chutney, and she used to make roast beef, cream cheese, and chutney on rye.
Oh, wow. That's a mouthful. Awesome.
Yeah, she's from New York. New York City. But she lived in Alaska.
Well, are you going to make quince chutney this year?
Yeah, you know what? I won't make quince chutney because I prefer to actually make like a quince marmalade. So you basically make a marmalade paste, and then you grate in, after that's all ready, you grate in fresh quince and cook it, and then you get a little different textural thing, like a marmalade. It's really good, and it's got a nice little kick.
And what about quince pickles?
Yeah, so I saw a recipe for that, and I want to make it for... I've never made them before, but because it's such a hard fruit before you cook it or overcook it, I thought it'd be a good one to try as a pickle. You know, like apple rings. You know, the pickled apple rings. I love those. Yeah. So I thought it might be pretty good.
I bet it would be good. I'll be eager to try those.
Yeah, like a little goes a long way, but...
Well, you know, it's one of the earliest known fruits. It's one of the fruits that go way back before history, really. And its origins are in Asia and the Mediterranean, also in the Caucasus and Iran.
Yeah. And you know what? People shouldn't get it mixed up. There's a quince that blooms early in the spring. That's not the one. That's an ornamental quince.
That's ornamental, yeah.
And the ones that we're talking about grow on trees.
Right. And if you think about the picture
and don't have thorns
in Roman mythology, if you think about that drawing of Venus standing there holding something in her hand, it's a quince that she has in her hand. And they played a big part in Roman mythology. Also, here's what I found that I really love is Nostradamus loved quince. And
who could have predicted that?
Yeah, who did?
Ba-doom, ba-doom. Don't forget to tip your wages.
But he has a cookbook. He has a recipe book. Nostradamus wrote you know, he's a seer and a healer and all those things that he is. He also made jams and jellies, and quince was one of his favorite ingredients, and he never believed in peeling them.
Oh, and you know, we should add too is that they're really fragrant. Like,
they smell so good.
If you pick them, you can leave them in a bowl in any room, and they'll perfume the room.
They just make your whole home smell good.
They do. They have one of their strong points.
Do you like quince paste, like membrillo?
I do, with manchego. Manchego cheese.
Yeah, yeah. So, what else do I have to say
about
that?
I'm here to avenge the death of my father. But give me some membrillo first.
Give me some of that. Well, anyway, back to the recipe that Nostradamus gave us. He said, do not ever ever peel quince. And you boil them and boil them and boil them. He says you boil them until they almost shrivel up. And then you strain the liquid and you add 1/2 pound of Madeira sugar, you know, the big sugar. And then you reduce that. And that will be jelly. And it will be the color. He says the color will be as diaphanous as an oriental ruby.
Wow.
So you don't do anything but cook it and cook it and cook it and strain it and cook it. So, and he says also it may be given to the sick and the healthy alike. Okay. It's a jelly fit for a king. So if you try that,
I'll do that too. I have enough. I have like I have four trees, I think.
Yeah.
They're all different. One's like a Russian one, like Kugaskaya.
Oh, and one's well, see, that's from the Caucasus.
And then one's from Portugal. It's called Portugal. And then there's a Dutch one called Van Damme. Yeah, Claude Van Damme. Van Damme. No, I think it's Van. I think it's Van. Van de Man. Maybe Van de Man, I think.
Okay, well, since you grow them, how do I tell if my quince tree is ready to be harvested? I mean, how do I tell that they're ripe? When do we pick the quince?
They're a great fruit for picking. You can pretty much pick them even if they aren't quite ripe, because they will ripen off the tree.
They do?
Yeah, what the unfortunate thing that happens here is you want to pick them, like now I would pick them, because you'll see some of them will start to split because of our rain. When it rains, it absorbs water, and then it cracks the skin, and that's when you start getting rot. You'll see brown rot.
Yeah.
But you still, the quince is still good. You just cut off the rot.
Cut that piece
off. Again, it's such a firm fruit. It's so hard that it doesn't soften it.
Well, does it turn yellow on the tree?
Yeah.
So you shouldn't pick it when it's green and take it
not green. You want it when it starts, when you could look at it and go, okay, that's yellow.
It
doesn't
then
have to be a dark
it.
Yellow, but
yeah.
yellow. Yeah.
yeah. Oh,
do animals eat these? Like, is deer a problem?
No, my deer they munched on the leaves, but they didn't eat the...
Oh, say it sounds so unpalatable.
It is, but it's raw. It's really not very good. I'm always wondering who invented cooking it. I mean, who thought of cooking that nasty piece of stuff? Because it's awful.
Yeah, and then if it's too ripe, it's not...
And it's not good.
It doesn't. It kind of goes the other way.
So that's sort of the autumn fruit on the autumn fruit table that we have.
Yeah.
Another thing I think about in autumn is casseroles. I just love to have casseroles in autumn. And I found a James Beard casserole cookbook that's really pretty interesting. And he's got lots of good ideas, but his are, you know, the book was written in the 50s. So he's got things like codfish and salt pork casserole, which I don't think we'll do that. But his vegetable casseroles are beautiful. So, you know, a casserole really happened in France. That's where it was invented. And it was peasant food, and it was all leftovers put in a pot.
Yeah.
And they called it a casserole. James Beard, however.
Was that cassoulet? Is it cassoulet or casserole?
Well, cassoulet, casserole. I'll have to ask Francois.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But he says the secret to a good casserole, along with long cooking time and maybe braising or whatever you're going to do, is that you really do need to serve it in a pretty dish.
God
or
bless
it won't
James
be
Beard.
Good.
No.
Yeah, I know. God bless James Beard.
I know. It has to have a nice tureen.
Mm-hmm. It does. You know, and that really does help the
It dresses up the tater tots.
Yeah. It dresses and the hamburger that's in the casserole,
And the flash fried onion rings that come out of a can.
Yeah. Well, except that you told me about a stew that you like to make in the autumn that just sounds really good to me.
Oh,
can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's sort of, I was reading, I discovered it through the New York Times. They had an article about, it was called something like the wild flavors of Texas Hill Country, I think was and so they were talking about the different things they made, because there's a lot of hunting there, a lot of deer, a lot of their antelope.
Have you ever been to the Texas Hill Country? Sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no, just briefly, driving through.
I've spent some time there, and it's really magical country. It's very dry, but there are...
Now, wait, am I thinking the right, like Austin-ish?
Yeah, and kind of north of that
as well. Scrubby oak and...
Scrubby oaks and little arroyos and dry hills and mesquite. But it's a wonderful, wonderful place.
Yeah.
So I can see why something good would be born there.
Yeah, and the stew is really one of those, because it's a little... it's unusual, I think, for what we tend to do for stews, and it's basically they use venison, but you can really use any meat. I've used pork before, and
well, you know, there are a lot of hunters on this island, and maybe venison would be something they'd like to use.
And it's basically you saute the venison with garlic and onions, and you get all the good drippings in there, and you add oil because venison's really lean.
It's dry.
And then you take that out of the bowl, and you add a few more onions, and then you add chilies, like poblano chilies, and then you
Do you do anything with the poblanos? Do you roast them first, or do you just chop them up and
they
put
just
them
have
there?
It. Yeah, okay. They just say you chop it, but I think it'd be good if you roasted it. I've done it with hatch chilies too, where I've chopped those up, and you keep sautéing that, and then you add some chili powder, mm-hmm. and then you add 3 cups of cubed pumpkins or butternut squash.
Like regular old pumpkin?
Regular old. Well, you want sugar pie pumpkin.
Okay.
Like
yeah.
Most pumpkins you see out front in the front of a store are for carving.
Are carving pumpkins.
Ornamental. You can always be guaranteed when it's a sugar pie pumpkin. It's a little small guy.
Right.
Or a butternut squash is a great way. Or acorn squash. But acorn squash aren't very thick.
No, and their texture changes a lot when you cook them. They don't hold up very well, but butternut does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you just basically, you stir that around and you get, you heat the spices of oregano and bay leaves in a cinnamon stick, and you saute it till sort of thick and the vegetables are coated. And then you put in 4 cups of chicken stock. And then here's the clincher, kids.
What?
You have 2 15-ounce cans of hominy.
Hominy.
I love hominy. I'm trying to think. It's either one I like better, white or yellow. I don't. They're both okay, but
I like them all.
Yeah, they're
both.
Good. And then that's the stew.
I like all 2 of them.
It's a really good one. It's really good. But you're basically simmering it for like 2 to 2.5 hours.
Oh, that just sounds delicious.
It's
better
killer.
Make that. I think we better make that sometime this fall.
And you can, and they say a lot of people do is they put it on top of grits.
Oh. Well, I can see it or on top of mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes would be
be really good too. Well, you know, we're running out of time already.
What?
And we didn't even get to talk about drinking vinegars and holiday gifts. We'll talk about that next time.
Okay.
So it'll be November 1st when you're back, and there's still time to make holiday gifts on November 1st. So we'll talk about food gifts.
Will I be in Paris then?
I don't know. Are you going?
No, I just wanted to have something like...
I just
wanted to add some cachet to my...
check your flight schedule.
Oh, no, wait. I forgot. I canceled that trip.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Well, you're going to South America instead.
I think I'm going to Tacoma.
It's warmer. Yeah,
Fife.
So.
I'm going to Fife.
I hope so, too. Well, One thing I do want to add is that there's a lot of new adventure out there in food, people, in the autumn. And the people at Thriftway have been so good to me in answering my questions, because they're getting a whole lot of new produce in that we don't even recognize. I mean, we recognize it basically, but it's new to the store. And I would encourage people to ask the produce people, how do you cook this? What do you do with this in this autumn? Because they're very good about helping.
Yeah. And it's a fun little, you know, if you need more time on the internet, but it's really great to really dive deep in recipes.
It really is.
And not take the first 2 that come out of the the search.
And have a look.
Yeah.
I think the autumn season invites us to slow down a little bit, simmer some things, braise some things,
have one pot dishes,
yes. Although James Beard would eschew that idea. You must have a
salad.
Well,
he's dead.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for listening, and I'm so glad you were here. Tom, thank you for coming.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Beard, I didn't mean that.
No, he didn't mean that. We're going to put the recipe for that hunter stew online.
Okay, I have homework.
Well, you can just copy and email it to me.
No, I will.
I'll do that, and then we'll get it online, and everybody can fix it, and we can compare notes next time. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to seeing you next week. And in the meantime, cook up something delicious. See you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.